Welcome to the Dialogue Studio. This podcast series is hosted by the Ikeda Center for Peace, Learning, and Dialogue. In it, we explore the transformational practice of dialogue and why it is important, especially in this current moment. I'm your host, Lillian Koizumi. In these episodes, you will hear from individuals from all walks of life sharing what dialogue means to them and how they are practicing it in their daily lives. We will also introduce our founder Daisaku Ikeda's philosophy of dialogue and the various approaches and strategies we practice here at the center. For Ikeda, the more severe the challenges we face, the more crucial it is that we persist in dialogue, because dialogue has the power to break down the walls of mistrust, hatred, and division in the hearts of people everywhere. We hope you will join us in this endeavor to transform our world one dialogue at a time. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Dialogue Studio. Happy September. I hope you all had a lovely August and enjoyed the end of summer vacation. We had a meaningful August here at the center with a Dialogue Nights event commemorating the 80th anniversary of the U.S. bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Together with young people from the Greater Boston area and our friends from the Greater Boston Physicians for Social Responsibility and the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, we talked about what true strength and peace mean and how we can all contribute to a world free of nuclear weapons. In addition to our event, we also met as center staff to reflect on our trip to Nagasaki earlier this year in April. We had the great fortune of meeting several hibakusha there, as well as other peace activists. It was a deeply moving experience, and we learned so much. In today's episode, you'll get to hear our takeaways and some highlights from the trip. And joining me in the studio are our center's executive director, Kevin Marr, our senior peace researcher, Alexander Harong, our outreach manager, Henri Carre, and our program and office assistant, Priyandra Noel. Let's jump in. Hello, Kevin, Alexander, Henri, and Pri. I'm so excited to have all of you in the Dialogue Studio today, and I'm exciting to be able to come together again to reflect on our recent trip to Nagasaki. I say recent, but it was in April, and it's August already now, but sort of all these months later, especially as we think about commemorating the 80th anniversary of the bombings. I think it's like really meaningful actually that we're meeting now to have this conversation. And so, yeah, for our listeners, you know, we'll be reflecting today on the trip and sort of our takeaways. And so, yeah, I was thinking that to start today, maybe just to bring us back to the trip and sort of set the tone for our conversation and to give our listeners a little sort of look into what the trip was like, that we could start with just each of us sharing one word or phrase you would use to describe our trip to Nagasaki. And I can start since I've thought about it already, but my hyphenated word, or I don't know, is that one word? Is life-changing. So that's my word. So yeah, whoever wants to go next.
I can share, and thank you so much, Lillian, for this opportunity to reflect on the experience of going to Nagasaki. And it was very difficult to think of one word, but for me, I think I would choose transformative, and which I think connects with yours as well. But for me, it was certainly a transformative experience.
I can hop in here. I think of the word immersion. And just for a little context, just think of study abroad. I had a great time studying abroad in my college experience, and the benefits of that experience, I felt it in this particular trip. So immersion.
Beauty would be my word. It's such a beautiful city. And those hills of Nagasaki, they don't really get much more beautiful than that.
Wow, those are great. Yeah, I thought of many words too, and it was hard to find the right word, and I'm not sure if this is the right word, but I thought of moving, just because I feel like something like stayed with me in my heart after we went there, and kind of maybe like along with the transformative and life-changing piece, I felt like it just like, I don't know, something changed, and I felt like I was really moved. And it continues to impact me, so I'll say moving.
Wow, thank you all so much for the wonderful, yeah, when you were sharing your words, it brought me back to different moments of the trip and different memories we had there. So thank you for setting the tone for our conversation. And so, yeah, the first main question I wanted to pose is to invite each of you to share one highlight from our trip to Nagasaki. And I say one because I know there was so much that we experienced there. So if we could pick one, maybe we have the same one and that's okay. But just to, yeah, if you had to pick one highlight, what would it be?
Mine's actually related to my one word of immersion. So the reason why I go back to the word immersion for this particular question is because I was just thinking about how, we've done so much to really do our best to understand as much as we could before going and kind of tying it to study abroad. I just remember like when I was learning French, there's the practical aspect of, really picking up what you need to really feel confident to then use the language. In this trip, I felt like in arriving there with the knowledge we had, but then connecting with Hibakusha and just other peace builders who are locally really engaged with sharing this message of peace, it did bridge any remaining gap between what I understood and what really happened, being able to directly hear from the Hibakusha, just how they experienced it, and even being assured by them to just share their story as is. I think a lot of times when I think of very difficult moments in history, I get tongue-tied on trying to find an entry point of how do I talk about something that I can't empathize with or that I maybe didn't necessarily experience, but that I feel passionate about in terms of, getting rid of war and such. And so to, yes, again, meet the Hibakusha who were like, please just share the truth. That's what we're doing with our lives. I feel like I got that because I was able to immerse myself in the city with you all to really specifically learn about nuclear disarmament, especially in the context of education. So, yes, meeting the Hibakusha and being able to immerse myself was a huge highlight of many.
Thank you, Priya. I think I can connected with what you just shared. For me, if I were to share one memory, and again, the entire trip was impactful and transformative, but I probably would choose or or select in the tour of the bombing site and the atomic bomb museum. That was our first day there, our first experience there. And that moment that we stepped off the bus and walked down the steps to the hypocenter of the bombing, it impacted me in a way that's really hard to put into words. And standing on the very spot where the bomb was dropped and being there, being present, seeing it with my own eyes, hearing the firsthand accounts of the loss and devastation was profoundly moving. I found myself brought to tears many times when we were there together. And what struck me was really that the firsthand account from our tour guide, who was Hibakusha, and her personal experience and the experience she shared of many others really transformed what I had previously only encountered through textbooks and videos into something that was deeply human, deeply immediate. And similarly, being in the museum, seeing the photos, and just seeing the complete loss and devastation, especially in the aftermath of the bombings, was deeply impactful. There was this one photo that stands out to me. There was an image of a mother and young child that, who were killed in the bombings, and the tour guide shared how. The child had was red on their entire body, except around. There was one part of their body that was still white, and that was because the mother shielded the child from the tried to shield the child from the bombings. And just thinking of the human impact and the love that a mother has for a child and wanting to protect their child, was I sat there and stared at that photo for many minutes, and I still think of it to this day. And throughout that trip, we kept returning to this idea that especially that all people, but especially young people, should have the opportunity to visit Nagasaki or Hiroshima, to meet the people there, to hear their stories. And I truly feel that that experience would fundamentally change the way that people think about nuclear weapons and war. I don't see how it could not transform the way that you perceive it. And for me, that the experience of being there, of hearing those stories, seeing the images, will stay with me for the rest of my life without question.
Yeah, I can add to just learning from the stories that the Hibakusha that we had the fortune to meet shared with us, along with visiting the museum and seeing the images and being in the actual place. When I heard the stories, I felt like I could really put myself in their shoes and really just like think more deeply about what they experienced. And the thing that moved me the most was just how committed and dedicated they were to continuing to share their stories in order to ensure that nobody ever has to experience that again. And the way that the Hibakusha, all of them, shared their story was really like without any resentment and without any like putting blame on, who did this to us, who killed all of our family members, basically. And just like the courage and the strength that they had to continue moving forward. And one of the Hibakusha we met, Mr. Ikeda at the Shiroyama Elementary School, he had just shared with us that the only way that he could continue to survive was to keep going, because if he thought about anything else, then he would have died, basically. So just like the severity of what that experience must have been like. And at the very, very end, he had shared with us, just imagine that, we take peace for granted, and imagine that, tomorrow or any moment from now, we could lose everything. And that was the personal experience he had. So I felt like when I heard that, and I just thought about, yeah, in an instant, something could be taken away from me, made me think that I also don't want to take peace for granted. So I continue to think about that to this day.
So one highlight that I will never forget from this trip was the evening we had at the Nagasaki Peace Center. I had the great honor of delivering the 106th Nagasaki Peace Lecture that evening, and the audience was extremely. It was just such a wonderful experience. It was. We had engagements on a very, very deep level, and it was it was so encouraging to sit down in workshops with the participants after the lecture. Now, what I did in my lecture was to suggest that Ikeda's peace proposals may be a gateway into the deeper peace philosophy of Ikeda, and I presented that body of work, the peace proposals. As a finished body of work, and then laid out three elements that is very easy to follow through the peace proposals that can also be an interesting gateway into the deeper philosophy. And I suggested that firstly, that human dignity is seen as the foundation for peace, and secondly, that dialogue is seen as the most powerful path to peace. And lastly, that global citizenship can be seen as a path to sustainability. That led to very, very many interesting and engaging conversations. And that's something I will absolutely take with me and never forget.
Thank you, Alexander, and thank you everyone for sharing your highlights. I resonated with all of them, of course. And yeah, Kevin, when you were sharing, I was also remembering the first day and us going to the hypo center. And yeah, I also will never forget that feeling. And I think the like experience of physically being there, you really, I think as Buddhists, we talk a lot about the land and like just the oneness of life and the environment. And I just like could really feel the suffering that was in that place, but also like the hope and determination that we then experienced through the people there giving us that tour. So it was like such an impactful experience. So when you were sharing about that, it made me think of that too. And Henri, you talked about, the Hibakusha that we met, and we met several of them, right? I think we've all been reflecting how fortunate we are to have had the opportunity to meet with several Hibakusha, especially, I think until we went there, it didn't hit me like sort of how old they are now. Of course, I know of them and I hear of them like through videos, but going there, it really hit me like, wow, maybe this is my last time meeting this particular Hibakusha. And so it was just, so powerful to meet with them in person and to really, be able to hear their stories. So I was wondering, we've been talking so much about just how encouraged we were by each of them. And so I was wondering if some of you might share some learnings you have from your encounters with the Hibakusha that we met in Nagasaki.
I can share. I think connected with what you were just touching upon, Lillian. I was really reminded of the power of sharing personal stories and the impact that that can make, and that a story can take something that can feel abstract and make it really tangible. That is, you have that immediate, emotional, unforgettable encounter through hearing the stories, and we heard so many powerful, moving, gut-wrenching stories throughout that trip. And I think from a US perspective, that we often can talk about the bombings of Nagasaki and Hiroshima as singular historical events, that these two bombs were dropped and thousands of lives were lost. And of course, that is true and horrifying. And what can also get overlooked at the same time are the stories of survival, right, of what happened after the bombings. And so hearing those accounts was really emotional and gut-wrenching to hear those experiences. And they were shared in a way, they were delivered in a way, really speaks to the educational aspect of storytelling and dialogue. And I really felt that every person that we met with, especially the Hibakusha, seem to carry this mission to be for peace education, and that being the very core of who they are and what they do. That is their intention, is to share these stories to cultivate cultures of peace. And I, for me, like hearing those stories, Henri, you talked about visiting the Shiroyama National School, and just learning about, in an instant, most of the elementary school, it was the closest school to the hypo center, and that most of the population, the student population and the teachers, they all were killed in an instant. And then hearing of from the tour guide, who was a Hibakusha, who was a student at the school when it happened, it was just unimaginable, the devastation and loss that he was sharing about. But the resiliency and the hope that he shared, both in terms of his words, but in terms of his life itself, his commitment to peace education, and that we ended the tour, he urged us, he pleaded with us to, really to redouble our efforts toward peace and never forget the voices of Hibakusha. I took that with me and continued to reflect on that experience of visiting the school and hearing those stories. So, yes, there are many more, but those are sort of points I'll touch on. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much, Kevin. Some things that I'm thinking about in relation to what we learn from the Hibakusha is, in particular, something Mr. Tomonaga, who is both a Hibakusha and a doctor, shared about. I believe he was amplifying something Obama said when he visited Hiroshima, but just talking about how we need an ethical revolution to create a nuclear-free world. And that really stuck with me because. So I love etymology, so sometimes I go back or just looking up words and reminding myself, like, what do these things mean? And ethics are the moral principles that govern a person's behavior or the conducting of an activity. And when he said an ethical revolution, I was really thinking about how, as someone who strongly believes in nuclear disarmament, nuclear abolition being the way for peace, I am constantly grappling with this like tug of war of like, I just can't understand why someone thinks we need this when there are people saying I lost everything. And I guess being equipped with Mystery Ikeda's philosophy, both on a spiritual level, but also being engaged in Mystery Ikeda's work here at the center, that really highlighted everything for me, how we have to be able to have the kinds of conversations that the Hibakusha are courageously showing us of just being comfortable with the discomfort of the heaviness of speaking about the truth. I think even when I think of anything from my personal life to even atrocities that happen in the US, anytime I feel like I don't have the space to kind of unpack together with someone what happened and what we prefer to see in terms of our aspired future, that's when I bottle up, or that's when maybe I start building resentment towards a different perspective and whatnot. And so, yes, hearing Mr. Tomonaga emphasize this ethical evolution was really powerful, but also he emphasized two more things, which is that, you know, it's impossible to create a nuclear free world with deterrence. And just again, hearing this directly from someone who experienced the effects of it again just made me realize, like, wow, you know, what kind of world do we live in if someone who went through it is needing to also tell everyone else, like, this is. Like they're sharing with us not to blame the US or anyone for what happened, but they're really sharing with us so that we don't repeat this very mass traumatic loss of an experience that everyone then had. And so, yes, I feel more confident to say, like, it's impossible anytime I engage with this difference, which, yeah, there's more to unpack there. But lastly, he talked about the young generation being key to this. And as someone who identifies still as young myself, I think it is so encouraging to hear from an elder this reminder that I have to be able to carry on their legacy. And in the case of Hibakusha, really just this message of why we don't want another Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And so I've just been reflecting a lot on what role specifically can I, Priyandra, play to respond to his baton pass. And so those are three things of many that come to mind when I think of what I learned from the Hibakusha.
Just to follow up on what Brenda just said, there's also something fascinating with Hibakusha. You know, these very old people, they're of course in their 80s and 90s, but some of them are just so young at heart, just like the one that we just heard about, Tomonaga, Mr. Tomonaga. When he met us, he gave us so much time. We had a long meeting with him and we had a wonderful discussion, which was really dynamic. And even if I've met him before, I was really surprised and encouraged by by how dynamic he was, how willing he was to see our perspective and form his own perspective. And it was really a back and forth, which was really transformative. The fact that he could just, you know, when we're sitting there and becoming friends, and we just, you know, lay it out to him, would you like to come over to Boston and visit us? And he's just, yes, sir, absolutely. That's what he's going to do. And, you know, that coming from an elderly like that, you know, of course we have travel plans and of course we can just, you know, arrange something. That was just wonderful.
Yeah, thank you all for sharing. I just, Alexander, I really resonated with that. And I think it reminded me of something Henri said earlier about meeting the Hibakusha, like just being struck by how hopeful they are. And I think youthful is another great way of explaining that, Alexander. I hadn't really thought about that. Like all the Hibakusha we met had such a youthful, like vibrant spirit. And that is something that I think I've been like sitting with a lot and thinking about. We just, you know, had a Dialogue Nights event this past week, commemorating the anniversary and what we can learn from Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And we introduced the theme strength through peace as a way of challenging the common narrative of peace through strength. And I think like meeting the Hibakusha, that was one of my biggest takeaways, was like, wow, they went through this deep suffering and they could just be so angry, but they're so hopeful and strong. And it really made me deepen my conviction that peace, like, is strength. You know, like, they've chosen to walk this path of peace in their life despite what happened to them, and they're so strong because of that. You know, and it's like so inspiring. It makes me think, like, wow, you know, I can easily hate on someone just for doing something like very small, like a very small injustice to me, and I can be like, I'm gonna, you know, I can't forgive them, but they had this incredible injustice happen to them and their families, and yet, like, they're not seeking revenge. I think Pri or Henri mentioned this too, and yeah, it's just been really wonderful. So thank you for sharing your reflections and sort of connected to, you know, dialogue nights. We've been trying, right, to, like, not just let this be an experience, and we've come back and we've had so many conversations, like, what can we do to really continue to take what we learned into our work now? And so I was wondering for each of you, you know, as we think about the takeaways from the trip, are there ones that you've wanted to apply in our work now and even in your day-to-day life, like takeaways that you're continuing to think about, you know, 4 months now, right, since we went in April?
Yeah, I can share kind of related to what Kevin shared earlier about having the fortune to hear these Hibakusho experiences and not forgetting that and continuing to share our experience with them and knowing that some people may never have the opportunity to meet them face to face. But of course, there are so many stories online that are available that we can listen to their stories and resources that are available, but maybe not accessible or people don't know about. So I think for me, it's definitely sharing my own personal experience and with the people around me, you know, sharing my experience about going to Nagasaki. And then I think related to what you were just sharing, Lillian, with hearing and experiencing how much these Hibakusha had this like deep desire for peace. And it reminds me of this quote from center founder Daisaku Ikeda, who, and this is not a direct exact his exact words, but just that those who have suffered the most deserve to become the happiest. And for me, I think I was most moved by that, and just grappling with, yes, as a person who, you know, I thought desired peace, but maybe have not experienced the sufferings of war in the way that these Hibakusha had, just like being so inspired by their dedication and commitment, and trying to see like what is it that I can do in my life with that kind of dedication and passion and commitment and urgency for peace. I think it's still something that is like maybe like being created in my life as well, as I process the experience and talk with others, but really just trying to maintain that commitment and strengthen it each day, and through that being able to take concrete action. So yeah, I think it's, you know, it's only 4 months before that we went, but being able to really continue to expand on that.
Another key takeaway for me from this Japan trip is that it was a very powerful reminder that we're not alone here. The Suka family is very large and is very strong, and the commitment to nuclear abolition is as well-founded as can be. So there was many expressions of this. In Nagasaki, of course, we met so many wonderful peace activists within the Suka family, and we befriended so many people that will be of relevance to our future activity, I believe. That's definitely something that I'm bringing with me back home, and that's something that we really need to be aware of everything we do, especially within nuclear disarmament education, that, you know, this is not something that we're just doing for ourselves from our center in Boston. This is something that is supported by a whole worldwide movement. And that enormous momentum that is created by that movement is something that we have to keep in our minds as we're proceeding with our work at the Ikeda Center.
One takeaway for me, I really appreciate this question and having a chance to reflect on it and discuss it to get dialogue together about it is this came up a couple of times on the trip, the sort of the stark reality that many young people, including young people in Japan, are not aware of what happened in Nagasaki and Hiroshima, which that kind of shocked me that even young people in Japan are not aware of it. And so the importance of education, the importance of dialogue on matters of issues of peace and disarmament, I came back sort of even more energized. I mean, I was energized before, but felt even greater energy on the importance and significance of creating spaces. So I was so thrilled that we were able to host the dialogue nights last Friday. And similarly, many of the participants that came shared that they had no background or awareness in terms of disarmament or what actually happened in Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and how important it is to have those spaces. But then as an individual too, how can I continue to educate myself and share those stories and engage in dialogue with people in my local community, even within my family? There's a recent PBS series on the bombings that I've been watching and was watching with a family member this week and having dialogue about it, and they had a very different perspective in terms of why the bombs are dropped and et cetera. But it led to this, what I found to be a very value creative dialogue, to where I trying to put into principle our dialogue commitments and ground rules of coming from a place of curiosity rather than immediately going towards a debate style of conversation, but really trying to understand where they were coming from, and then sharing from my experiences of visiting Nagasaki, but then the dialogues that we've been hosting here, not as an expert by any means, but just sharing from that perspective. And it was a kind of, it was a surprising outcome, but I feel like that's an ongoing effort. And again, the learning from the Hibakusha and the people that we met in Nagasaki, it's in their DNA to share those stories and engage in dialogue, realizing how critical it is that we're all aware of our shared humanity, but also the shared threat that we live under as long as there are nuclear weapons.
I'm also being reminded of how dialogue is what gives us a sense of agency. That's another takeaway I have through us having dialogues with Hibakusha and all the peace activists there, because one thing that a youth representative from an organization called Peace Education Lab talked about is that the challenge for some people is to feel empowered to act in response to the stories they hear. And I think from what we learned from them, coupled with what we directly heard from the Hibakusha, I really feel like coming back and working at the center here, where we really do our best to creatively think of how can we hold space for diversity, differences, and like inspire people to find a common ground together is dialogue. And so coming back from the trip really made me realize like, oh, that's the thing that gives us power. So in moments where I feel powerless, I have to ask myself, and this is both from the nuclear disarmament realm, but also beyond, did I have a dialogue today that can help me pull myself out of that powerlessness? That's something I've been thinking about more actively. And also, I came back feeling like I want to really lean more into my conviction around my belief and understanding of peace. And anytime I doubt that conviction, to just keep seeking, read a book about something that the other side shared, or find a space where there are people from both sides of any issue, where I can inject myself in to, understand more perspectives, trying to find more ways to do that. Both at work, but in my personal life too.
Well, thank you all for sharing those great takeaways. Yeah, the dialogue piece that you just shared, Priya, is really powerful. And it just made me think that, wow, all the Hibakusha are like such great dialoguers. They're all engaging in dialogue. They're like such practitioners of dialogue. And that's really encouraging to think about. And Kevin, when you mentioned about how some of the Hibakusha shared this like really surprising reality of how many young people in Japan don't know about the bombings or when they were dropped, where they were dropped. That was like very shocking for me too. And one thing that I've been thinking about a lot since our trip is related to Mr. Tomonaga too. During our exchange with him, at one point he had said to us that if he thinks that if this generation of young people right now, if they think that we should have nuclear weapons, and if they sort of continue to have the same mindset of deterrence, then he really feels like that's like the end of the world. Like our nuclear age will continue forever if this generation of young people think that we need them. But if they can really believe that we don't need these weapons and that these weapons are the ultimate evil, then we can change everything. And so I just keep thinking about that. And it really encouraged me because, right after we came back from our trip to Nagasaki, we were holding this Educating for Peace conference, our inaugural one, right? We were launching this conference in partnership with the Soka Institute of Global Solutions, with the James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Studies, and then Ed Ethics at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And so we were able to gather these amazing teachers from all around New England and, also some from different states to come together to talk about the importance of disarmament education and how we can really teach young people about, the realities of nuclear weapons and the humanitarian consequences. So, yeah, it was such an amazing conference to have, especially right after coming back from Nagasaki. So we have, write-ups on our website and, different articles, but I thought we could share some learnings from the conference here. We were all there together and, how for you, from the conference, like how do you feel like we can really educate more people about the threat and humanitarian consequences of nuclear weapons? And yeah, just sort of what you're still thinking about, from the conference that we had just in May.
So I think for me, one reflection from the conference that really stands out is just how genuinely hopeful and uplifting it is to bring people together in solidarity to explore pathways toward fostering peace. And the commitment there was just without question. The presenters, the participants, the staff, of course, and just in the planning meetings, there was this shared commitment of how can we do this together. That really spoke to me deeply. And of course, while the focus of the seminar was undeniably serious and at times somber, the act of engaging in dialogue, brainstorming ways to educate young people and foster a wider network, that really filled me with a deep sense of hope throughout the conference and then following it as well. Of course, it was alarming, though not entirely surprising, to hear just how many schools across Massachusetts and beyond, that there's very little focus on peace or nuclear weapons in the curriculum. This was reaffirmed in a dialogue that we had earlier today with a teacher as well. And at the same time, I was really heartened to learn that there are many educators, peace builders, and scholars doing incredibly innovative work to develop and share classroom resources that can be integrated across a variety of subjects. And it feels like there's greater momentum at this current moment to in terms of those kinds of resources. So definitely the tools are out there, and I feel that there's a strong and growing willingness among educators to teach with a commitment to peace and disarmament. And the challenge I feel though now is expanding that circle. And that's what we've talked a lot about post conference is reaching out to more schools, more teachers, more communities. But I was left with a really a strong conviction that this circle can and will grow, and with a renewed determination to do what I can to support that.
Yeah, as I was listening to you, Kevin, I was just thinking, and I felt this at the conference too, but middle and high school teachers are so incredible. And they took their time, like a weekend, on top of their really busy schedules to come and learn more so that they can teach their students about peace and about nuclear disarmament. And one takeaway I had was one of the teachers who flew all the way from San Francisco to come to Boston. She was so excited that we had representatives from Students for Nuclear Disarmament at the conference, and she just wanted to hear all of what they had to share about how they got interested in nuclear disarmament and how they were able to be active in their schools and to get other students to talk about this issue. And I felt like that kind of learning from each other was really inspiring to Yeah, to really meet like students maybe where they're at and how to build this community. So it's really exciting that we were able to like make all those connections here and the people who came, and continue to really like advance with this like mission that through education we're able to really transform society and have people who grow up to really care about peace and prioritize peace. So it's definitely like a long journey ahead, but really just starting here and being able to contribute to that in some ways was like such an encouraging takeaway for me.
Thank you, Andre. I also think back on the conference, Educating for Peace conference in May, as a great success. And of course, all the podcast listeners that have listened to the podcast episode 2 episodes ago, when Lillian had a fantastic dialogue with some of the participants, they will know that the teachers network that is being created from here is awesome. But there's another element too. Which is what I would like to think about as a support structure for all these teachers that are already within the network and those who's going to come into the network and make this a strong movement over the years to come. That this conference really showed how strong the support networks for those teachers really are. We had really top-notch peace activists from the anti-nuclear weapons movement contributing and dedicating themselves to following up this network over a long time. We had nuclear disarmament experts, academics. We had lots of really, really wonderful people with very high competence in this field that clearly committed themselves to following up this teachers network in the years to come. So that's something that just the fact that we have such a support structure for those teachers, that's a great success.
I think a learning that I had from the conference. Well, first, I love teachers, kind of amplifying more of what Henri was sharing. I think they deserve a pay raise, a really big one. But lastly, just really through this conference, I felt like if we give educators the space to creatively think about and practice and apply how they want to teach something to their students, like the possibilities are endless, is what I really felt. As was shared earlier, these were teachers who are already really busy, who took the time out, not just on a weekend, but on Mother's Day weekend, to really ask one another, how can we really bring this back to our students? Like that, knowing that teachers are out there doing that, and just teachers in general, that they're really thinking about the student and how. It makes me think of something. One of Mystery Kata, our founder, Mystery Kata's mentor's mentor, Mr. Makiguchi, talks about how happiness is like the realization of the student's own happiness, and just really feeling that permeate in the space of like, wow, teachers really, they came here because they recognize this conversation is integral for the happiness of the coming generation. So I just left feeling like I already love teachers, but I love them so much more, and I want to celebrate them so much more, is what I felt.
Thank you all so much for beautifully capturing different aspects of the conference. Yeah, it was definitely so hopeful. And I totally agree with you, Pri. I feel like teachers should be paid the most. And yeah, I was also so blown away by each of them and just like how much they really care about their students. And so, yeah, I'm excited, like you said, Alexander, to be able to contribute to like providing some kind of support or structure for teachers to engage with this work. 'Cause I think I really realized like, wow, people really do care about this issue. And I think a common thing we hear when we do nuclear disarmament work is like, oh, people don't really care about this issue. It's not a big issue for folks. But just being in the room with these teachers who had different levels of knowledge and engagement with the issue, like, then to see like they all really, really care and they want their students to learn in a genuine way. And yeah, I was just so encouraged. And I realized like, wow, we really have to do peace together. You know, one of the things that one of our scholar friends like years ago said is people who are doing good work like have a hard time uniting together because there's not a lot of infrastructure or spaces for people doing good to come together, but people doing sort of evil or bad things, like they easily unite, right? And so how do we like provide the structure and space for all these amazing peace builders and educators to come together and sustain this work and to support each other and to see the friendships being built within the conference? That was like so beautiful too. And yeah, I just had so much hope as well for our future, and are excited for next year's conference. For our listeners, we'll put some of the write-ups of the conference in the episode description so that you can read about it. And we'll have another conference next year, so stay tuned for more details. So I can't believe that we're at the end of our dialogue today. We got through a lot, and I know there's more to unpack. So I hope we can continue this conversation outside of the studio as well. But for our last question today, I, wanted to ask all of you here that, when we were in Nagasaki, right, we all kind of touched upon this. We had asked many of the hibakusha and peace builders that we met, like, what would they want to share, with the world? And right, they shared so many beautiful and hopeful things with us to bring back to the US. And so I was just thinking, now that a couple months has gone by and we're commemorating the 80th anniversary, like, if you could share a message back to them, right now, if we could get on the phone or fly back to Nagasaki, what would you want to say to them?
Thank you so much, Lilian. That's a great challenge. I think that what I would have said to the hibakushas is that ultimately hope is a decision, and we choose to hope, and we are dedicated to that. So even if we are living in dangerous times, we choose hope, and we still hold that complete abolition of all nuclear weapons is possible. So of course it will take a lot of time, and it will take a lot of effort. But we are committed to the cause, and that's the reason why we will succeed. That would be my message.
I would share just thank you so much for sharing your stories, for not giving up, and for continuing to fight for peace and being examples of people who do have hope and people who continue the important work of not just one's own life, but for the sake of humanity. And definitely that I will never forget that and will not take it for granted. And we'll continue to learn and continue to develop my passion and actions towards peace.
I echo the spirit of gratitude that Henri is touching on, and Alexander too. And for me, the concrete way of showing gratitude, of course, is to take action, right? And so not just to have an experience on my own, but to be able to respond to that experience. And I think in the spirit of the podcast theme and and points that we've already discussed today or touched on today, for me, I'm determined to redouble my commitment to engaging in dialogue about peace, about what we learned in Nagasaki, about the stories that we heard there. I feel that that is upon us. That is the task for each of us, is to redouble those efforts towards peace and engaging in dialogue. I was reflecting as well on our Ikeda Forum last year, and which was titled Imagining a World Where Peace is Possible, and where that forum explored the role of youth, imagination, and human relationships in creating a more peaceful world. And I felt that that was very much in line rhythm with the experience of being in Nagasaki, and that they provided us with a profound examples of resilience, courage, and the impact of storytelling, which we've touched on. And so for me, not just being inspired by that experience, but then actually putting it into practice on a micro level in terms of the way that I engage with people in my environment. And I feel that Mr. Ikeda provides a wonderful model of that, of treasuring each person that we encounter, but then taking it one step further and one step further beyond that as well. Like, how am I concretely going to put this into action so that it just doesn't stay as a memory is what I'm thinking. So thank you so much.
I would say thank you for as well for your courage, wisdom, and compassion to share your stories with us tirelessly. And also that I will make sure that now I have this baton of peace, that I won't let it go. But when I do let it go, it will always be in the capacity of passing it on to someone younger than me to keep that peace spirit going. But then lastly, this is less of a message, but I think if I had the chance to meet them or any Hibakusha again, I would love to ask them more about just their life. What do you like to do? Who's your favorite artist? Or just, really, I would love to get to know them more beyond their story of the atomic bomb droppings too.
Well, thank you, everyone. I think I'll answer this question too. For me, another really unforgettable moment on our trip that I keep going back to is some of you touched upon this experience is when we went to the Shiroyama Elementary School and meeting Mr. Mitsuyoshi Ikeda. And I keep thinking about this moment at the end when he really shared with us, from his heart, that it's not about blaming others. And he said, he doesn't blame America for dropping these bombs. But he said that it's really about how we never forget, what happened. And also that for him, it's about him treasuring one child at a time, each child, each person in front of him to really treasure that person. And I really learned peace education through his life. And then, we came out of that building after meeting him, and all these kids from the elementary school came out. And I think Pri or someone asked them what are they doing or something. And the kids had an assignment, and their assignment was to look for spring because it was springtime. And I just being like, wow, this is the kind of world that we can create. These children, they're looking for spring, and what kind of adults will they grow into if we continue to treasure them in this way? And so I think in that moment when I was standing in front of Mr. Ikeda, I remember just feeling I really hope I can meet him again. I want to come back here again. And so I really determined that even if it's one more person, that I want to bring one more person back to Nagasaki. I know it's not necessarily about going there, but to Kevin's point that being able to visit while the Hibakusha is still alive, I think is so important. So I just want to say to them that, I'm going to do my best to come back again and to bring more people and whatever I can do every day to never forget. I know so many things happen in our day to day, and there's more news and more suffering, and so it's easy to get distracted. But just the spirit I learned from them, I really want to really really to I won't forget. I won't forget what I learned from all of you. So yeah, I hope some of our Hibakusha friends are listening and get our messages. And I want to again thank my wonderful colleagues for joining me in the studio today and having this wonderful dialogue. I know it's hard to, it's there's a lot we were processing. So to go back to it and process together, probably there are moments that are not as easy too. But I appreciate all of you being able to share your reflections and it's great to be with you, and hope that we can continue our dialogue today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Lillian.
Thank you so
So
much. Thank
grateful.
you.
Yeah,
Thank
so grateful.
you. Thank you for joining us in the Dialogue Studio today. I hope you enjoyed listening to our takeaways and learnings from Nagasaki. You can find links and more information on the resources we discussed in the episode description. If you are interested in learning more about the Ikeda Center for Peace, Learning, and Dialogue, you can visit our website at ikedacenter.org or follow us on social media at Ikeda Center. Thank you again, and until next time, happy dialoguing.